What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 45, Injury Expert, for March 27th, 2013. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. With me today, we got Crystal over here on Ustream, and then...
Daisy.
Claudia.
Susie.
Monica.
Priscilla.
Leslie.
Kaylin.
Lodi's taking pictures. Karen is checking the sound quality over there. We're going to call Mr. Will Carroll in just a second. He is on Twitter. It's at the Injury Expert. So if you search for Will Carroll or Injury Expert on Twitter, you can find him there. And we'll have somebody tweeting live, so you can follow us on Twitter, find that stuff there. But before we call him, we're going to go ahead and get started so we aren't spending too much of his time. Just a little bit about him. He's the lead writer for Bleacher Report Sports Medicine. He's been working with him for about 12 years. He's probably going to talk a little bit more about that, but I wanted to do the warm-up, and then we'll call him there. So our typical warm-up, let me preface it. This Friday, we're going to be doing a Superfood Friday. I think we've kind of started a little tradition here, so we can work on eating superfoods. So this Friday, we're working on smoothies. So we're going to be doing superfood smoothies. We're going to be bringing, like, berries and bananas and yogurt and things that are nice and good and healthy, and hopefully we'll have some good reports on good mixtures for smoothies and that kind of thing. So that's our plan for this Friday, but let's do our typical. All right, so this morning for breakfast, I had a sausage, biscuit, egg thing and a glass of chocolate milk. Daisy?
I had a biscuit, a school's biscuit, and apple juice.
Just a biscuit, or was there meat?
Sausage.
Sausage biscuit, yeah. Okay.
I had a strawberry yogurt with blueberries in it.
Strawberry yogurt with blueberries? Nice, nice and healthy.
I had a biscuit from the school.
All right, good. School biscuit. Any juice?
Apple juice.
Apple juice, all right.
I had a white chocolate mocha frappuccino and a spinach burrito.
Spinach burrito,
yeah, it's
from
good. Starbucks.
All right. All right.
School's breakfast and an orange juice.
I ate some, what is it, cereal, the Kellogg's, the strawberry ones. They're good.
Kaylin?
The school breakfast.
School breakfast. All right, good. So, Crystal, did you eat breakfast this morning?
Mm-hmm.
School breakfast?
Yeah.
So I think everybody ate something. Did you eat school breakfast? Lore? Nothing? Dadgum it, Lore, you're killing me. We had 100% until I asked you. Shouldn't have asked you.
I don't eat breakfast.
It's okay. At least we all eat something. We all eat something for breakfast. So very cool. Very cool. So we're improving. Get a better start. You're smarter throughout the day. You're less hungry later. So you eat less. Yes, you found that's true?
Yeah. I don't eat at, like, lunch anymore.
I started eating salads at lunch. They're good. I just realized they're very good.
All right. That's good. Good choice is better than hot Cheetos and whatever it was.
Oh, and I said spicy Doritos.
You can go ahead and click answer.
With video or just answer?
Just click answer and then we can turn the video on. All right. Hey, Mr. Carroll.
Hey, how's it going, Jeremy? Sorry I had that tech issue there. I've actually had to switch computers.
That's all right. We were doing the warm-up, and so that way I wasn't wasting too much of your time. So you got it squared away now?
More or less. How do I sound?
Sound good here? Everybody can
awesome.
Hear me?
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Did you want to run video or not?
Oh, I thought this was just regular old talking.
Well, I mean, we can do talking, but with the video, the kids can kind of see you interacting. So you're talking, and it's up to you as whether or not you can run it. We can run it here and then give that a shot, and if not, then we'll just go talking.
I can. Give me just a second, because I need to change shirts.
All right.
Hold on just a second.
All right, so while Mr. Carroll is getting ready, do you guys remember what you're supposed to be bringing for your smoothies on Friday? Oh, I talked to Miss Manning. She said she's going to let us borrow the blenders. So we should be good to go on the blenders. So I'll bring what I'm supposed to. Got it, Yev?
I got it already.
You got it already?
What are you supposed to bring?
What am I going to bring? I was going to bring some yogurt and some milk, some of the, like, base things. So, and I think I might bring some peanut butter and dark chocolate so we can make the
white chocolate's really good.
But the white chocolate isn't a superfood.
But it's so
the
good.
Dark
no,
chocolate
you could put the
superfood.
White chocolate with strawberry. Like that.
I think it's kind of missing the point. Missing.
It has a lot of stuff in it.
Well, you can do that at home on the weekend. But Friday, we're working on healthy stuff. All right, so, Mr. Carroll, if you're there, as soon as you're...
I am, oh. And I'm just loading up.
Hello.
How's that?
Looks good. All right, so we can see. Daisy, did you turn our video on?
Our video?
What's that?
Okay. There.
All right. You got... Awesome. What baseball stadium is there behind you?
That would be... you can probably see the bridge there. So that is Pittsburgh.
Ah, Pittsburgh. Very nice. All right, we turn... Where it says computer Skype on the soundboard, turn that up just a little bit so we can hear him just a little bit more. All right. You ready to get this thing started?
I'm ready to go. About how long are we going to go?
Usually not more than like 45 minutes, okay. But we could go pretty much as long as you have when to talk, because I can let the kids go.
Well, and then we could go all damn day.
Okay. Well, Claudia?
Can you give us a short story of your road to becoming an injury expert?
Well, it's not sure there is a short version. I basically fell into this. I've been around sports medicine my entire life. My father has been in sports medicine. He's currently the director of sports medicine at the University of Mobile. So if anybody's looking for a college. So having been around that, having been around doctors and trainers my entire life, I spoke the language. So about 12 years ago, I just couldn't find this information. I looked around and I was like, you know, what is this stuff? I understood kind of all the terms and the languages, how they were using it. And people that I was playing in fantasy leagues with were saying, hey, 4 to 6 weeks on this sprained ankle, which should it be? And I was going, well, it's this and this. And so it's probably going to be more towards 4 weeks, but watch out because he won't be able to steal. Or in football, you know, you watch out for the receiver with the high ankle sprain, things like that. But I couldn't find the information and sent an email to 3 friends. And I was like, is this anything? And one of them, Jim Callis from Baseball America, was like, I don't know, send me one tomorrow. And I kept sending them. I was lucky enough to get picked up by Peter Gammons, the Hall of Fame. He was with ESPN at that time. He talked about my column on the radio. I was driving down the road listening to the Tony Kornheiser show and very literally came about this far from running into a telephone pole. I was so shocked by it. And it's just grown from there. You know, to me, I feel very privileged to be able to kind of tell the tale of sports through the lens of sports medicine and be able to highlight the work of all the doctors and athletic trainers and other associated health professionals. So to me, I've got the greatest job in the world.
All right, so your father, you said, is the director of sports medicine, so you just kind of grew up learning about it, you know, just by hanging around dad, and then because of your, I guess, passion for fantasy sports and wanting to know what's going to be best for your fantasy sports team, it kind of developed into a job and then a career.
Exactly, exactly. I've been lucky enough to do this for, this will be the 13th season of Under the Knife, the first season at Bleacher Report, really excited about that. But yeah, you know, I almost literally grew up in training rooms, so it gives me an advantage to know so many of those guys and to know what they're going through and how hard they're working.
All right, very, very interesting. A lot of times you hear people get hurt, and then that's how they get into, like, physical therapy or sports medicine or something like that, but you almost ran into a telephone pole and got into it.
Can you explain your job with Bleacher Report?
Yeah, this is new for me, so we're still figuring it out. You know, what I do at Bleacher Report, I'm the lead writer for sports injuries, and basically that gives me a very wide beat. We're still figuring out exactly what it's going to be, but you know, Bleacher Report is coming on so fast. They're growing, now part of the Turner family. Really excited about that. You know, we've had specials on CNN now. For me, what I believe it's going to be is it's going to give me a broader audience to do the same things I've been doing. You know, I don't think it's going to change what I write about, but it might change how I write about it. there's going to be a whole lot more video, and I'm really excited about the possibilities of that. Being able to get out there and talk to the trainers, talk to the doctors, even more than I have in the past, I think it's going to be nothing but great. Right now, whether it's me, whether it's Dave Siebert, who's about to graduate from medical school and does a great job of breaking down the technical issues of sports medicine, right now I think we've got a sports medicine team second to none. And I'm really excited. Bleacher Report, such a huge place, such a great place, and excited to see us taking the lead in yet another field.
All right, so is the – I know RotoWire was what your buddy Jeff Stotts was.
Yeah.
They're focused on fantasy sports. Is that kind of the lead focus for Bleacher Report?
No. Bleacher Report, actually, we do a lot of fantasy sports since it's such a big market, but – I'm kind of moving out of that. For me, it's always been about the injuries. It's been about the sports medicine. And while a lot of that is applicable to fantasy sports, and that was the direction they wanted me going at Sports Illustrated, where I was previously, that's never been it for me. You know, there are times when an injury has an application to fantasy sports, and sometimes an injury is just an injury. And I think people take fantasy sports and kind of put them in their own block. I don't do that. I think injuries are injuries. It doesn't matter what your application is. If you're a fan of a team, if you're a fan of a player, if you're a fan of a game, all that comes together. So for me, the focus is going to be on the injuries and teaching people. I think my platform gives me an opportunity to say, this is a sprained ankle. This is what this is. Watch out for this, because I see so many times that what we talk about at the upper level translates down to the lower level. There's such a role model effect to sports that I think it works in sports medicine as well.
All right, so you're kind of moving away from the fantasy sector, but it's still going to be part of what you're doing.
Yeah, it's certainly part of what I'm doing. I don't think it's going to be the key factor in any stretch of the imagination, but I really don't like the dividing line. You know, people often say, you know, sports are over here and fantasy's over here. I think there's so much overlap that sports is sports. If you want to watch the game at a bar with your buddies, great. If you want to play fantasy sports and get really obsessive about it, hey, great. I don't think we should separate them. You know, people, especially writers, have been kind of put off in this little fantasy ghetto and not treated like they're real writers or real sports writers. There's a bias against them, and I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I got you. I understand. Priscilla?
What opportunities have been opened up through this job?
Through Bleacher Report specifically, or through my job in particular?
Let's go with your job as a sports writer.
Wow, so many. You know, I've gotten a chance to tell so many stories and gotten a chance to do so many things, whether it's to, you know, be on the field before a World Series game, whether it's to go to the Super Bowl last year, whether it's to write the books that I've written. Yeah, it's pretty much given me every opportunity. I've been lucky enough to have a lot of opportunities and hopefully made the best of them. You know, things like being the first internet-based writer in the Baseball Writers Association is something that I take very, very seriously and was deeply honored when I had that opportunity. Gosh, getting to know the players, getting to know the doctors around the league, being able to explain to people that Adrian Peterson's recovery is much more about science than it is about miracles. Being able to explain those things for me has been just a great opportunity.
All right, so you talked about going to the Super Bowl and then being on the field for a World Series, and then there's obviously a lot of other things, you know, getting to meet the players and the doctors, and did you actually get to talk with Adrian Peterson there about his situation, or just explaining that to the people from what you've gathered?
I've talked to Adrian quite a bit, you know, from the point where he was down in Pensacola having the surgery. He's somebody that I've followed very closely and certainly knew he was going to be a big story. I can remember as early as January of 2012, he was way ahead of schedule. Talked to Jim Andrews at that point. I was like, how's Adrian doing? And Jim turned around. This was actually at his conference last year. And Jim turned around and he goes, I've never seen somebody so far ahead of schedule. And to be that early in the process, he had the surgery on New Year's Eve. And so here we are in late January, and to be already ahead of schedule, I knew something special was going on. I started following that a little bit more closely. And at the start of the season, you know, people called me crazy because I was like, look, he is that far ahead that I think we have to at least consider him with the first pick overall. I think he might end up being the best player in the NFL this year. And while I certainly didn't expect what he did, I expected him to be really, really good, and he was, beyond our wildest expectations. Now the question is, do we have to reset our expectations for every ACL injury? You know, we're seeing two situations like that right now in football with Robert Griffin III. He's just 2 months out from ACL reconstruction. And Marcus Lattimore, who was here in Indianapolis this week with the NFL Combine, had a devastating knee injury. Three torn ligaments plus other associated damage, and he's running already. You know, he's talking about being ready for the start of training camp after an injury that was having people question whether he would ever play again. So those are pretty special, and seeing what Adrian has kind of pushed forward has been a really, really intriguing storyline.
All right, so out of the things we kind of just mentioned, the Super Bowl, the World Series, you know, getting to meet and talk with Adrian Peterson or you know, going to the NFL Combine, what's probably your favorite thing that you've done out of your list of what common people would be, like, in awe of?
Super Bowl was a great experience. Indianapolis did such a great job with the whole weekend, and seeing my town really be the center of the world for a week was pretty amazing. There are a couple that stand out. I can remember the 2005 World Series. It was the first I covered, and I was watching Jeff Bagwell very closely. He had an arthritic shoulder. He was struggling to play. He was in significant pain, and yet went out there and was able to play. And before the game, I was standing behind the batting cage where he was warming up, and there was a point where I was watching him and trying to see if, you know, was he gritting his teeth and fighting through the pain. And I was close enough that I saw a tear. He was hurting that bad. I thought for a moment it was sweat. No, that guy was in that much pain and was able to go out there and play at a high level. He turned on a 97-mile fastball later in the game. Didn't win the game, but certainly gave his team a better chance. That was an absolutely amazing experience. Last year, I was able to finally talk with Ryan Sandberg, who was my favorite player growing up. I'd met him as far back as 2003, but I hadn't actually been able to get words out of my mouth. you meet your heroes and lock up, and it isn't the proudest moment of my life, but being able to tell him just how much he had meant to me as a kid, watching him play, and in a large part, I love sports because of watching him play. So little moments like that, there have been literally hundreds of those. I can't certainly not enough time to list them all off, but those are ones that have really hit home with me.
That World Series you were talking about with Jeff Bagwell, that was the Houston Astros. I think that was the only time we've been to the World Series, and unfortunately we got swept in four games by the White Sox, but we were there. And so that's pretty cool that was your first World Series to cover.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was a great series. Everybody remembers it as a sweep, but every single one of those games could have swung on one little thing. And so often that one little thing is what players are healthy, what players are available. Would the Washington Nationals have been a better team last year if they'd managed Steven Strasburg better? How many times have we seen going into a playoff game, is this guy healthy or that guy healthy? Would the Patriots have been different if their tight ends had been healthy all year? And I think that alone is one of the big stories of sports medicine. There's only two ways to win in this game, and that's to collect enough talent and then to put that talent on the field. And it's amazing to me how little we put into that second part of it. We've got million-dollar athletes and million-dollar bonuses, and then we've got research budgets that can't get to thousands.
What is one of the hardest things about your job?
It's not like I'm working on a salt mine or anything. It's a really good question. To me, it's detachment. being able to have a normal life on top of it. I know this is a major problem for athletic trainers, is they've got to work so many hours, they've got to work so hard, and to walk away and be able to, you know, have time with your family, have time with your friends, to not be thinking about it. The tough part for my job is that my job is sports, but even when I walk away from it, you know, even if I wasn't doing this, I'd be watching a game, I'd be reading about it. So what most people do to get away from their jobs is my job. So I think not having it on your mind 24 hours, not getting into situations where you're burning yourself out. The other really difficult thing is that my job, almost by definition, is illegal. As you well know, athletic trainers and doctors have regulations that limit what medical information they can give out. And while I respect the spirit behind the rule, I don't think it should apply the same in sports. You know, when someone sprains an ankle, that's a public thing. Certainly there are times when you don't want a situation to come out, and I think anybody that's human will understand situations that occur. You know, there have been players that have been given cancer diagnoses. There are players that have been told they have, you know, this weekend. At the NFL Combine, there's a player, Star Lotulelei, who was thought to be a top 10 pick and had a heart condition. Now, it looks like that's not going to be a serious thing, but this could be something that affects the rest of his life or even shortens his life. So how do you deal with that? How do you judge the sports aspect versus the human aspect of it? And that often gets a little dicey.
All right, so you kind of mentioned Marcus Lattimore, and then you're saying all that stuff should be public. You know how on ESPN they showed the injury over and over?
Yeah.
And some of the people were like, oh, this is the worst injury I've ever seen. And so then they kind of showed close-ups of it. What is your take on the media kind of continuing to put those things out there? The TV, the visual media putting...
that's tough. Actually, the one recently that really got to me was Nerlens Noel, the... center forward from Kentucky, had just an ugly knee injury, and it bent in sideways. And it was just one of those where you're like, I don't want to see that. It's never fun to see those. It's certainly difficult. For me, when I was putting my article together on Noel, I was like, do I want to put a picture in here? And you know, it was widely seen, but I didn't want to see it again. And my editors were like, well, people, you're describing the injury. You might as well have a picture in there. And we kind of went back and forth on that. And, you know, it had been out there so widely. It wasn't like I was hiding it from people. It was just I didn't want to see it again. There's that fine editorial line of how much do you show. I think we saw that this weekend at Daytona. There was a crash there. Part of a car went through, and a number of people were injured. And there was a video put up of, you know, the guy was just trying to take a video of the finish of the race and ended up videotaping this very violent crash that critically injured a couple people. NASCAR wanted it pulled down, not for medical reasons, but because they say they have control of all their video. And they certainly didn't want something like that out there acting against their interest. For those, you know, there's a journalistic interest and a moral line that you have to figure out whether or not to cross.
So that's just something you basically constantly have to decide
where you're going to stand. Yeah, you always have to. You know, it's one of those things where you don't want to see it, but it's out there. It's out there and it's public, and you're going to see it on YouTube. You're going to see it on ESPN. I think there's a level to which you have to wonder about it. But injuries are a part of sports, and I think everybody should know just how violent they can be. But then again, I don't want it rubbed in my face either.
Well, you have worked for a lot of big names in sports journalism. Which one are you most proud of?
I'm proud of all of them. You know, writing for Sports Illustrated was a dream come true. You know, as a kid, back before
iPads and the internet, Sports Illustrated was the everything. We would get that once a week, and that was sports. The cover was an even bigger deal then than it is now. So to have been a part of that, really, that's one of those that I'm very, very proud of, and they do amazing work over there. I'm very proud of Bleacher Report. I'm really excited to see where we're going to go over the next 5 years, because I think Bleacher Report is going to be what people of your generation look to the way that I look to Sports Illustrated.
All right. Did you say you did the cover for Sports Illustrated?
No. The cover was such a big deal. I mean, it's okay. A big deal now. Who's on the cover every week and unveiling of the cover. But back then, we saw the cover when we pulled it out of the mailbox or right. Saw it at the newsstand. And it was an even bigger deal then. And now, we talk about the cover of Madden, but Sports Illustrated cover still, I think that's the gold standard. You do that, you get your name on there, that's a big deal as a journalist. You get your face on there, that's a huge deal as an athlete.
All right. Yeah, that's Sports Illustrated was, I remember, or probably somewhere around the same age, that was a pretty big deal, important. You're like, oh, Sports Illustrated, and then somebody would have it at school, so then it would kind of get passed around and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So how far back was it when you started working for Sports Illustrated? Sometime in the last 12 years?
Yeah. I started working for them, and I started doing pieces for them as far back as 2007, but I was full-time in 2010 and 2011 and 2012, two great years. Again, I can't say enough good things about Sports Illustrated or how proud I was to be a part of that. Small part, but nonetheless.
What are your future plans for sports writing?
To keep doing it. I don't want to have to go back to a real job. I love working from home. I love being able to go to the ballpark. I love being able to watch games. I love occasionally taunting my friends who are working in offices and holding up the phone to say, oh, hey, I'm at work, and then you get to hear the cheer of the crowd, which is probably why I don't have many friends. Yeah, to me, I just want to keep taking this to a new level. I think there are so many people out there that would be interested in this kind of thing if they were just exposed to it. Sports medicine is kind of the underwritten part of the game. When I started this 12 years ago, almost no one was writing about it. You would get maybe stenography about this guy has a sprained ankle, or you would hear what the manager said in the press conference. To this day, we still don't hear from the trainers and doctors on a very regular basis. So I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see them be able to tell their own stories rather than having the manager translate it poorly. I think this will get to be a bigger and bigger thing, especially because we've seen sports medicine stories move to the forefront, whether it was steroids in the last decade or concussions in the last couple of years. And I think over the next decade, that will be the single biggest story in sports. Sports medicine is at the forefront of that. Some of it's a sports story. Some of it's a technology story. If we can build better helmets or technologies that will help people recover. But I really think this is going to be a bigger deal. And beyond that, I think as we tell that story, more people are going to be interested that, not everybody is 7 foot tall and can hit a 3-pointer. Not everybody is 300 pounds and can run a 4.640. But there are a lot of people that love sports and want to be a part of it. And I think sports medicine, whether it's athletic trainer or one of the other associated people, I think a lot of people don't even know this exists. And I think the profession is so great that giving more people an opportunity to do it or to at least have that option is a big part of what's going to happen over the next decade.
That leads perfectly into Monica. I had a question for you.
How can someone get into a job like this?
No, they can't. No, just me. No one else should ever write about injuries. I don't need the competition. there's a lot of paths now. I mean, when I started writing, there weren't blogs. I didn't go to journalism school. It seems like every baseball writer either went to Syracuse, Missouri, or Vanderbilt. And that's not the path now. If you're good enough and work hard enough and have something interesting enough to say, people will find you. One of the things I love about Bleacher Report is that it's a meritocracy. If you're good enough and can do it consistently enough and people read your stuff, you rise to the top. And I think that's phenomenal. Seniority doesn't mean much. The fact that you've been doing this for 20 years but have been coasting. There are sports writers, I won't name names, TJ Simers, but their act is just absolutely tired and borderline offensive. There are guys who are out there that are doing almost nothing and keep their jobs for years and years because of hosting. And I think that's downright wrong. So if you want a job like this, there has never been a better time to do it because anybody can. There's no barrier to entry. There's no cost to entry. The only cost is hard work and interesting ideas. And there's a lot of people that have those, especially in the sports world.
All right. So you're saying those guys are keeping their jobs because of hosting? Because they host a show or something like that?
No, I mean, there were a lot of guys. I'll call out one example. Rick Riley is one of the highest paid guys in sports writing. He works at ESPN now. When he was at SI and wrote the back page, he was phenomenal. And he has been coasting for years. Every once in a while, you see that he's still got a fastball, but so much of the time, he's coasting. And he's coasting on a reputation. Now, granted, he made that reputation over decades, and I don't want to take anything away from Rick, but there are guys like TJ Simers who I have no idea when he was ever considered to be good. He's downright offensive. His act is tired. He goes in there and tries to bait people into saying stupid things, and I find it downright offensive and makes it tougher for other people to do their jobs. I think what we need to do is keep pushing the market. It's not one paper in every town anymore. There's not competitives. Now you're fighting with everybody, and I think it's going to make the profession better.
All right. I was just wondering if you're telling me that I was being lazy because I'm the host of this broadcast or not, so I was checking.
TV is a whole different thing. TV and radio, whole different thing. I'm just talking about sports writers in general. It used to be that you would work your way up. You'd start out covering high school sports and maybe you get to be a beat writer and the best beat writers would get to be columnists. And now it's a completely different world. You don't have to go that route. Right? There's nothing wrong with that route. And certainly those guys have earned the respect and have a lot more experience than most people. Certainly for somebody like me who didn't go to journalism school, that has learned on the job very literally. Some of my biggest stories early on in my career, I screwed up. There are things that if they came to me now, I would know how to do it so much better. But I think that's true in any profession. I don't think journalism school would have given me all the answers, would have given me a lot of them, and maybe I'd avoided some of the mistakes along the way. But I think now that's not the only route. Certainly a good one, certainly a valid one, but certainly not the only one.
Now, when we talked to Jeff, he's kind of said the same thing. He was, like you said, the beat writer, and he was just doing it on his own time and then started submitting stuff. And eventually somebody said, hey, you're doing a good job because you're working hard. Let me give you a shot here. And then they picked him up, and now he's, I think he said, full-time with RotoWire.
Right.
And then also full-time at the high school that he works, or the school that he works at. So it's just kind of one of those things. If it's something you're passionate about, you just go for it and keep working at it, and then either somebody will pick it up or it won't, but either way, it's something you're passionate about, huh?
Exactly. I mean, I love this. I would be, like I said, I'd be watching sports anyway, so getting paid for it's just the icing on the cake. I think the thing that a lot of people don't realize is everybody has opinions. Everybody that watches sports thinks their player or their team is better than the other team, and here's why. The tough part is doing it again and again and again. A lot of people have one interesting idea. Not a lot of people have, one interesting idea a week. Not a lot of people want to put in the work that we have to put in to do this job. I know Jeff is the exact same. You know, and on top of that, he's an athletic trainer at the high school level. I don't know how he juggles it all, plus has a family. Those people, I think, the ones that can go out there and do it again and again and again, the ones that keep grinding, the ones that put out columns every week, every day, those are the ones that really gain my respect.
All right.
You were recently at the NFL Combine. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Combine's here in Indianapolis every year, and is getting to be more and more of an event. You know, this year there were 800 people that were credentialed media and people on top of that. All the athletes there, I think it was 300-something athletes being checked by all the scouts and interviewing and being around town. It's always an interesting experience, and I think it's getting bigger and bigger every year. The NFL is actually going to move it back next year, and the rumor is that they're going to try to turn it into more of a reality show, that there's going to be a road to the combine, and some of these small school guys are going to have to go to regional combines. And I don't know. This whole reality TV thing, sometimes it works when you put together a good show, and sometimes you get the next Honey Boo Boo. And I'm not sure we're going to know who has personality. You know, certainly the NFL Network needs the programming, but I'm not sure we need this kind of programming, especially after we've seen this year that life itself can turn into a reality show with something like what's going on with Manti Te'o. I'm sure they would have loved to have been able to show that process, but I'm just not sure how that's going to work out. I like the combine as it is. I don't want to be too much of a traditionalist, but I think the combine and the draft process is getting bigger and bigger. Certainly at Bleacher Report, our draft guru, Matt Miller, nobody's read more. All he has to do is put out a mock draft and another million people read it. So it's certainly very, very popular. And the NFL knows popular better than anyone.
Huh. Very interesting. So when you're at the combine, do you get to sit like in the bleachers or walk the field and do that kind of thing, or are you? How does that work for you?
For me, this year was different because I was switching over to Bleacher Report, so I wasn't actually credentialed this year. But normally, yeah, you do hang around. A lot of people. See, I'm different than most people. There's nobody else writing about injuries that's there. You know, and in a year like this, where guys like Lota Lely had the heart condition, Jarvis Jones with spinal stenosis, and we've got Dee Milliner who comes out and has a great combine, except he's got to go have surgery. He's supposed to have it today, actually. And how's that going to affect his draft status? To me, I don't want to get in the way of the people. If you want to interview the coaches, if you're one of the beat writers or columnists that needs to do that kind of stuff, I don't want to get in your way. Watching somebody run a 40 isn't going to tell me a whole lot, unless it's one of the few guys, you know, like he's had a knee injury, or Eddie Lacy, the running back from Alabama, had a hamstring injury and didn't run. Those kind of things speak to me, but I don't have to be at the process itself to do that. In the past, I've been in there, and there are times when I just feel like I'm getting in the way of people. What I want to talk to is the agents. I want to talk to the doctors and talk to the players outside of that, and I'm able to do that credentialed or not credentialed. I'm sure I'll get credentialed again next year just to have it, get in there and talk to the media, but it's a very interesting process with things like the combine or the NBA draft, or the MLB draft is actually turning into a bigger deal as well.
All right.
How can someone contact you or follow your work?
Certainly you can read me at Bleacher Report. It's not hard to find me there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my name is Injury Expert on there. And, it's not too hard to find my email contact if that's the way you want to go.
All right, so they can do that on there. So we talked about Jeff over at RotoWire, but he also mentioned that you're pretty big into the performance enhancement drugs. And then, obviously, there's all this information coming out. I think it's the Mayo Clinic or whatever it is down in Florida, and, you know, Alex Rodriguez and all these people being involved with these PEDs. Well, go ahead and tell us some of your thoughts or some of the things that you know about about that there?
Wow, the biogenesis story has been kind of the big one of the offseason for baseball, and it's too bad because baseball has done more than any other sport to get them out of the sport. The NFL has done a very good job of controlling the PR, but they've done absolutely nothing to get those kind of drugs out of their sport. You know, to me, steroids and the other performance-enhancing drugs weren't something that were ever a real interest of mine, but in 2003 and 2004, they were such a huge story in baseball that I wanted to know more. I needed to understand what these were and what they did. And I ended up writing a book in 2005 called The Juice, which was about the drug problem in baseball. And it stunned me how little people actually knew. We were writing about things we didn't seem to understand. And that was extremely frustrating to me. And to this day, we'll hear things like, oh, well, they're taking HGH. Well, there's no scientific study anywhere that says that HGH has any performance-enhancing effect. It's very expensive. It's very difficult to get hold of. It's very easy to track. It's hard to carry around. And yet, we've treated it like it's this magic bullet. I could take all the HGH in the world. I could take all the steroids in the world. I still can't hit a major league fastball. And over and over, the facts of the situation have failed to get in the way of the storylines. People don't like Alex Rodriguez. You know, he didn't fail any tests over the last 2 years, the period he was alleged to be using these drugs. Three others did. Why does that happen? Well, there's an easy scientific explanation for that. Either he didn't do it or the test didn't come at the right time. There's a very, very small window for detecting these drugs. Even for a drug like testosterone, which is widely used in a broad population, but not in baseball, there's still only about a week. If you take it on Sunday and you don't get drug tested until the following Saturday, it's about 50-50 whether it's going to come up positive on the test. So if we're doing three or four random tests a year, there's a lot of time in there where you could actually be using something and get away with it. The other thing that got more and more interesting to me over the last couple of years, especially with testosterone, is that testosterone is now a billion-dollar growth industry. There are hundreds of these anti-aging clinics and low testosterone clinics around. You cannot turn on sports radio without hearing an advertisement for one of those. You can't turn on TV. I was watching an NBA game last night to watch Kyrie Irving and see how he was moving around with his recent knee problems. And what pops up but an ad for Androgel? Now, Androgel is nothing different than what Alex Rodriguez was accused of using. It's a testosterone cream. You know, Barry Bonds was alleged to use a testosterone cream. So we're expecting something different from our athletes than we're expecting from ourselves. You know, we live in a very chemical culture. If you've got low testosterone, here's a prescription. You're overweight, here's a drug. You got trouble in the bedroom? We've got a pill for that. Heck, we've got 20 pills for that. We're expecting something more from our athletes than we do from ourselves. And I think that's largely because we don't understand the issue. And that's one that's been very frustrating to me.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming. And, you know, I hear some of the things. And one of the things that I was, like, most surprised about, I mean, you know, you can expect testosterone or HGH, those performance enhancer things, but I heard of people some of the players taking Viagra because it helps you focus. Or
yeah, it's actually a nitrous releaser. You know, Viagra was created for a couple different purposes. Well, Viagra itself was created to regrow hair, which obviously I haven't been taking it. while they were testing it to regrow hair, they. I don't know how they discovered but Cialis was done as a nitrous enhancer. The nitrogen in the blood, as far back as 2004, Viagra was being used as a stack. And there were a lot of people using it in concert with steroids. So it doesn't surprise me a bit that we're seeing things like that. The thing that worries me is, we've always presented steroids as kind of this magic bullet. If you take this, you will be a better athlete. And I think because we present it that way, kids of your age have thought, you know, it would help me. If they must be taking it. If Barry Bonds is doing it, I'd better do it. And nothing could be further from the truth. We've never had a study that's shown any major performance gains at the high school level. HGH at that level would have broad medical consequences unless you have one of the medical conditions where it's necessary. So I think this idea that it's a magic bullet has been a real problem in the media, and one that I've worked to correct and don't have a broad enough voice to be able to do it alone.
All right, so real quick, what are some of the things that you have done, or maybe some of the things that, if I just happen to have some listeners here, or these kids can hear and share with their friends, that we can dispel myths of steroids, or you know, that it's not a magic bullet.
Well, certainly you could purchase my book. Now,
what was that again?
I've written a bunch of articles on this, and I think anybody that does any quick research, I mean, it doesn't take that much to realize there are no scientific studies out there that show anything of HGH. There was an article that Dan Wade did at SportsIllustrated.com. Now, Dan is my former research assistant, did an amazing job showing of the guys we know in baseball, whether they were named in the Mitchell Report, whether they've had a positive test, whether they've admitted to usage, they've had almost no performance gains. We're talking about a maximum of 5%. Now, for every Barry Bonds, there's an Alex Sanchez. For every Mark McGwire, there's a Manny Alexander. Did they get the bad batch? I mean, even in this latest scandal down in Miami, sure, there's an Alex Rodriguez, but what about Francisco Cervelli? He didn't even hit 200. He's certainly not a power hitter. In baseball, people don't care about the steroids. They care about the records, and that's the problem. Unless we know somebody, it's ignored. I mean, can you tell me the last player to get tested positive in the NFL?
No.
It was an all-star.
Still no. I mean, the only thing I can think of is Ray Lewis, but I don't think it was a positive test.
What's that?
The only thing I can think of is Ray Lewis, but I don't think he had any positive tests.
No, he didn't have any positive tests. So the last positive was Brian Cushing with the Houston Texans.
Oh, that's right.
Positive for testosterone. So, and people don't remember this. And no. You know, it would have to be somewhat of a huge level. The last two that have been caught were Cushing, again, a Pro Bowl player, a highly touted rookie, and then Julius Peppers, who's probably a Hall of Famer someday. And I'm very curious to see whether Peppers, here in about 5 or 6 years, well, I guess it'll be a little bit longer than that, he's still playing, whether his Hall of Fame chances are going to be hurt at all by the fact that he was caught using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah, I know it makes a big deal in baseball, and I know that's the reason that this year nobody got into the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people, certainly you would think that Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds would be first ballot Hall of Famers absent the steroid usage. But you know, those guys are probably never going to get in the Hall of Fame. The vote totals were significantly lower than what I thought they were going to be. And for a player like Mark McGwire, he's actually down below the 25% threshold. Those guys usually don't make it. And I was actually painfully stunned what the totals were for Clemens and Bonds. I'll be very curious next year when we get a new batch of players, including Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine, two guys that have never been connected to any performance enhancers, if we're going to doubt everybody in that era. If those guys don't get in, we should just go ahead and close the doors.
Yeah, well, see, we were here in Houston. We were pretty upset that Craig Biggio didn't get in. I mean, you know, it's a phenomenal career, and I don't know that he's ever been connected with anything like that. So,
yeah, Biggio was another one. I think Jeff Bagwell, who I mentioned earlier, I think he's getting an absolutely raw deal. He played in a tested era, and in the period of time that he played, where he was tested, he did not test positive. So many people have said, oh, we've got to have testing. We've got to have more testing. We've got to test for this. We've got to test for that. We've got to have more penalties. We've got to burn them like witches. They're never satisfied. You know, if somebody takes a positive test, if they suspect somebody and they don't get tested, they say the testing doesn't work. Testing at its heart was supposed to do two things. First, to create a fear in the players to where if they were tempted by the drugs, they wouldn't take it. And by that, get it out of the game. And the other was to put a trust back in the game, that we were seeing, you know, a fair playing field, a level playing field. And even though those two things have happened, the trust isn't back. And if we're not going to regain the trust, why are we doing it? If we're not going to accept the penalty and say, you know, this is the judge and jury, why are we doing it? Why we're speculating. Somebody hits 50 home runs, oh, must be steroids. Jose Bautista has to answer that question over and over. You know, they're young players. Mike Trout, last year's Rookie of the Year, put on 30 pounds this year, and I'm told looks like a linebacker. And the stories have immediately come. If he goes out there and does what he's trying to do, he tried to power up, and he wants to hit 40, 50 home runs, there is no doubt that the steroid stories are going to start, and that's just wrong.
All right, so it is about time for me to let these kids go to lunch. So is there anything else you have for them, or you want to stay on? You want me to?
No, I think I'm good. I've covered pretty much everything. I can't think of anything else or why I'd be interesting for any more time.
All right, well, very cool. Mr. Carroll, I appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thank you.
Well, that'll lead me to wrap it up myself. So my words of wisdom for today are, if you have an opinion or have some content to put out there, then just go for it. There's lots of free venues or avenues to do that. So put that content out there, and then if people read it, good. If they don't, then oh well, it's still your deal to put out there. So if you want to contact us, definitely check out the website, www.sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And then that's pretty much all the information you need, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So for Jeremy, Mr. Will Carroll, the Sports Medicine One Kids, that's a wrap.